My buddy said, he said, what would you do if something happened to Becca? And I said, if something happened to her, I'd be a basket case and I'd have to lose weight. My wife goes, if I was to die, you'd have to lose weight? And she goes, why? And I'm like, did I say that out loud? And my buddy said, what he's saying is he could never get an attractive woman like you looking fat like that. And she goes, you'd lose weight for another woman?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And so I said, I'll lose it for you.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future.
Well, I am so excited for today's guest. We have Pastor Rob Ketterling here from River Valley Church in Minneapolis. They are one of our nation's leading and largest churches. They have 10 campuses, thriving online ministry. But what I am most excited about River Valley is their huge commitment to missions. And so I'm excited to have Rob on the show today. Pastor Rob, welcome to Made to Advance.
It is great to be here. And you're right, we love missions, and that's why we connect so well.
Yeah.
It's missions.
And now I've said this at church before, but I consider us sister churches because for those who are West Michigan fans around here, Kirk Cousins from West Michigan. Kirk Cousins is part of your church.
Yeah, and they do the team Bible study at our church, the Vikings
is
do.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So we are trail. I mean, we're knit through the blood of the NFL.
I actually said, when we got into town, we actually sent him a picture. We're in Holland. Oh, I told him we were preaching at your church.
Yeah. You know what? I had this idea yesterday. After we had dinner, I thought we should, do you know his office is right downtown, like a stone's throw from where you're staying? And I was like, we should, it literally is maybe one or two buildings.
We'll pop in.
Yeah. So I was thinking we should get you guys over there, take a picture, and then send.
He'll think I'm stalking him.
Yeah. That's all right. He's probably used to it. Well, I'm excited to have you on. And one of the things I love to do is just hear people's journeys. And, our show is really all about helping people take next steps, helping people take dreams that have been put inside them and put them into action.
Yeah.
So let's back it way up.
Okay.
And tell me, how did you end up in ministry in the first place?
I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay.
And I went on my first missions trip when I was 15 years old in the jungles of Brazil. And that's where I felt God say, you're not going to be a doctor. You're going to be a minister. And I was like, how about a doctor that does ministry? How about a doctor that does missions medical trip? And I really, just struggled with it all the way till I went to college.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm giving in. I'm going into the ministry. I'm called. I can't avoid it. This is what I need to do.
Yeah. Now, I thought when you went to school, so was your degree a missions degree?
It was.
Okay. So that's where you sense God's calling me into ministry. And then at some point along, you thought missions at that point.
I did. I really
did.
And
obviously something shifted it because then you ended up in pastoral ministry.
I looked at my gifting and it was actually my grandpa who wasn't even a believer at the time. He's like, wow, that's really weird that God would call you to be a missionary because you're such an incredible leader.
Hmm.
And he's like, I think you could lead a great church. And I was like, well, I don't know. But I mean, I still, even when I asked Becca, like we were getting serious in our relationship, mm-hmm. I said, I might be called to be a missionary, and I might go to the Congo. And if you can't go to the Congo, this relationship cannot go further.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, I did. And she's like, I can go, but please, God, not the Congo.
Yeah, yeah, but she was clear on this is where it could head.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I was, and it was missions, and I actually think that made me have a better understanding what is missions.
Yeah.
And then if I didn't get to go, I can send a bunch of people, but my heart, every city I go to, I'm like, we should move here.
Uh-huh.
We're in Bangkok. We should start a church here and pastor here. We're in Dubai. We should go here. And Becca's like, no, we're not. But that's my heart.
Yeah.
Huge.
So obviously you ended up founding River Valley, but surely church planting wasn't the first thing you did post-college.
No, I did two youth ministry positions, one in Minnesota and one in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And the church wasn't relevant. And if you remember back years ago, church wasn't that relevant to people and to not wear a suit and tie
mm-hmm.
and to have a drum set in the church. And, it's kind of like church could be relevant. And I kept saying, somebody should do a church that somebody who's 29 wants to go to. Mm-hmm. And that's how old I was.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, why don't you do it? And I'm like, me? And I was like, I'm going to do this. And so Beck and I started when we were 29.
Okay, wow.
You know, and left youth ministry, but we were in two churches, and it was the desire of, can a church be relevant and reach young people? And because we could hardly find youth leaders in our church mm-hmm. because there were no young people.
Right, right.
So
it's interesting how for starters in general, you see a problem of some sort. I mean, you see an issue and you're like, okay, somebody needs to do something about this, or why isn't this here? And then, and it's of course not, people can see problems. It's not always that doesn't de facto mean you're called to do something about it.
Right.
But at times it's like, hey, you saw the problem for a reason, or you saw the opportunity for a reason. In
it's
that
true.
Case, you guys saw it. Was it a big, the idea of starting a church? I mean, in my background, you know, church planting wasn't even a conversation. So the idea of like church starting was like, what? You know, what do you, so how, what was that like? Was it easy? Was it crazy?
Oh, it was terrible. I had no model to follow. I had some encouragement. And this was at a time where churches were saying, we should start churches, but they didn't know what to do for them.
Yeah.
So they had the idea without the infrastructure.
Yeah.
So I put $100,000 on my credit cards.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, imagine that at 21% interest. And I would just beg for coaching, and I'd go to places and say, like, tell me what I should do. And they, like one guy said, outwork your wife. I go, what does that mean? And he goes, if she has to be an accountant to support you financially, don't just tell her you were praying all day mm-hmm. and hoping the church would grow. Tell her how many visits you did. Go get up at the same time she does. Really move the ball forward, mm-hmm. not just reading the Bible and mm-hmm. waiting for the church to grow. I was like, okay, I'm going to outwork my wife. But it was little lessons like that,
yeah.
You know, but no, there was no coaching, there was no mentoring, there was no financing, and all those things exist now.
Right.
And we made it. I mean, and I keep saying God loves his church more than we do, so.
I'm so thankful. We're both passionate for ARC, Association of Related Churches.
Yes.
And I remember we were well established by the point that I even came across ARC, but we were going to send other planters through ARC, and I thought, I want to just see what they're doing, what they're teaching, et cetera, so that when I'm encouraging people and requiring them at times to go through this process,
right.
I know what they're going to go through. So we go through there, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. I mean, this is all the stuff that we either, thank God, intuited, which shows you the power of the Holy Spirit, because
exactly.
there's some stuff I'm like, yeah, we just
kind
of did that.
Yep.
Yeah. And some stuff, you're like, man, I would have, we eventually did that, but it would have been really nice to hear about this, like before tripping four times on the way there. So I'm
Without
so thankful for ARC and just a passionate investor in ARC. I know
we,
you guys
we were in the very beginning. Dino Rizzo was my roommate in Bible college.
No way.
Yeah. So
that just feels like a story. That's a whole episode by itself. Dino, I've never met him, but just listening to him. He just seems like a wild man.
Oh, yeah. And here's me, saved at the age of 7, Billy Graham crusade, walking the straight and narrow, and Dino, not saved until he's in high school, graduating, and surfer dude, radically saved.
Yeah.
And so he comes in raw, and I come in like, Dino, you can't do that. Dino, you can't do that. This is what Jesus wants you to do. And we were like the odd couple, but man, did we have fun.
Yeah.
And we actually led a small group together for 4 years.
No kidding.
Yeah. I was the worship leader and he was the small group leader for 4 years. And then fast forward in ministry, we were both senior pastoring churches. His was about 1,000. Mine was about 400 or 500 at the time. He might've been a little bigger, but he said, hey, there's this group starting ARC and we're going to do this thing with this round table. And the first round table is you and me. We're going to teach them everything we know. And there's these two guys, Chris Hodges and Rick Bizet. And I go, are they any good? And he goes, I think they're pretty talented. Like, they look really good. Well, now they have
Turns out.
Yeah, two of the biggest churches in America.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
We taught them everything they know.
I had no idea that those circles overlap in that way. That is really, really cool. So what you said about size of River Valley is good segue. Take us through a little bit of the journey. Like, you're starting out, and I mean, for us, it was 3 years. Frankly, for us, it was 3 years of just flatness as far as growth and all that.
Yeah.
But take us through a little bit of the journey, and when did you go, whoa, things are starting to move. What was all that like?
Yeah, it took us 10 years to get to that whoa moment. You know, I thought we'd be 1,000 in a year.
Mm-hmm.
I said, 1 year from now, we'll be 1,000. Becca, you can get a job as an accountant, and then you can quit, and I'll take care of everything financially. And it was 10 years till she quit.
No kidding.
10 years till we got to 1,000. And we started with 200, shrank down into the 60s because nobody told me you'd shrink. Mm-hmm. Then we broke the 100, 200, 400, and 800 barrier. And they're real barriers. We could have episodes on each of those because there are certain people that love you when you're small, then the middle, and then you get to too big to be small, too small to be big, which is the most miserable at 800. Mm-hmm. And then you finally break through. And people are quitting the whole time. You're like, wait, why is 800 too big, but 400 wasn't? And so you had to break all those barriers. And then at 1,000, you have a staff transition because the people that have the gifts to get you there don't have the same gifts to get you to the next level. It rips your guts out as a leader.
Right.
Ugh, we went through it all.
Yeah. When you think back about some of the, and I'm going to flip this to the more on the positive side in a second. But when you think back, that journey, and I know for us, I mean, it just is the way it is as you're growing through different barriers and what that means for the team and whatnot. When you reflect back now in the big picture for where you're at now, what are some of the things you look back on as a leader and you go, man, those were some of the hardest prices to pay?
Oh, man. I mean, you have to survive the financial test because you're just wondering, is it going to, like, are we going to make it? And then your biggest giver will quit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to realize God is your source, not them. The toll on your kids. I mean, I shared in your church that Connor was born with autism. And I mean, imagine this. I'm planting the church and people are coming up to me saying, our kids are afraid of your son.
Oh.
And we're going to find a different church.
Oh.
I said, okay, God bless you. Outside.
Yeah.
But internally, I had visions of the, you know, have you ever seen those movies like where you jump on them and you attack them? But that's in your mind, not real. I was like, as they're leaving, that's what I was processing.
Right.
And like, Lord, I have to bless them, but it hurts so bad. They attacked my kid and my calling. Mm-hmm. And oh, that was so hard. And then anytime they attacked, people attacked Becca because she was an introvert. And didn't want to ever speak or ever be on the platform, ever.
Mm-hmm.
She said, if you put me up there, you're a dead man. And so they'd be like, well, she's not the right pastor's wife. And I'm like, yeah, she is, because she's married to me and I'm the pastor, so she's the right pastor's wife. So those were tough times. And then, mutiny. You know, you have a staff that goes sideways and tries to split the church.
Yeah.
That, you're not prepared for that.
Yeah.
And it attacks you at a personal level. And so you're like, you lose your confidence and you're trying to lead and you're trying to look strong while you're shaking. And I'm so glad that they couldn't see, like, you know, behind my jeans, my knees were just trembling, you know, as I was leading the church, hoping I was doing it right.
Yeah. Remember Chris Hodges saying once, you probably heard him use this illustration. It's not quite the same, but when he said, I feel like sometimes when I'm up here in front of y'all, I'm like a duck. And you see me just kind of gliding along the water, but underneath my little feet are going
100 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's so good, and I just appreciate sharing those things because I think that sometimes when people see something that's grown and it's flourished and they think, oh, look at that, it must be great and all that, and you just never have any idea of the toil and the price that was paid behind the scenes. And it's good. And I thank God, and at least this would be my story, I'm glad he didn't show me all that ahead of time.
Oh,
I take it one at a time, Lord. Thank you.
I say church planting is for the ignorant. You know? Yeah. People are like, you want to start another one? Nope.
Yeah.
No, really. I mean, we were on the front page of the paper twice. Mm. And like British paper and global news. Like I'm watching The Tonight Show and they're mocking one of my staff members that fell that made global news.
Oh, my
And
goodness.
You're like, oh, nobody teaches you how to survive that.
Yeah.
You get somebody arrested by the FBI, your kid's pastor, and he goes to jail.
Oh,
and you're like, God, save our church. We had two financial crises, not just in the world, like internally, and we survived. And you're like, oh, Lord, thank you for loving your church more than we do.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you don't know how to make it, but you make it. And it reminds me where Paul says in 2 Corinthians, like, he got us through it, and he'll do it again, and he'll do it again. And Paul says, we thought we were going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel like that in ministry. I'm going to die. And God's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
But I push you to your limits. Now watch.
It is. It's such a good and encouraging word. And I think for marketplace leaders as well as pastoral leaders, when you are leading with Jesus, just living with that confidence. This is bigger than me. He called me into it. He's walking with me through it. And because it does, on the outside, it does feel like you're almost waiting, like, this is done. Yeah. There's no way we can survive this. It's over. I think a lot of pastors felt that when we went through COVID and or all that. And, you know, you just felt like this is the end on so many levels. It was crazy, though. I remember probably maybe a year outside of COVID, and somebody was asking me, how's Engedi doing? And, you know, and there are always ways, and I know you guys feel this too, some of the kind of the recovery side of that whole experience. But I took them through, man, we've had the most number of people put their trust in Jesus per capita that we've ever had as a church. We had our highest giving year. We had, there are a variety of things. Needless to say, I was like, and you know what? I said to them the same thing that you just said. It just goes to show that God is way more passionate about his vision for this church than you or I are as pastors. It's true. It's awesome. Have you found, well, go ahead.
I was going to say, I tell everybody, if you live in integrity, doesn't mean you're perfect, but you have integrity, God will fill in your shortcomings with his grace. Mm-hmm. But if you are a phony, you're on your own.
Yeah, that's good.
God's like, I'm not helping you.
Yeah.
You try to scheme your way out of that. And I'm like, I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah.
Here's what we're facing. Here's what's going on. God's going to help us.
That's right. It's just a great summary of really the opening Psalms out of the book of Psalms over and over. David's like, you know, he's on the run, he's hiding, and he goes, all I know is I can stand before God and say, I've maintained my integrity. I'm not perfect, but I've maintained my integrity in the situation, and therefore I know he's going to fill in the gaps.
And God takes care of it.
So when you, as the church is growing and flourishing, and, you know, there's, on the one hand, there are these early learnings you're having with size and staffing and some financial things. Did the challenges, I hate to, you know, sit here on the hard parts too long, but as the church grew, staff grows, et cetera, did you find that you get to a certain point where you're like, it has gotten easier in a certain way, or is it like, no, same big challenges come our way, but I've gotten more prepared and ready for them? How did that journey change? How old is River Valley right now?
28 years old.
28 years, yeah. So let's say in the last even 10 years, did the challenges change relative to the previous 18 years?
There are bigger challenges. There's more zeros on every problem. Mm-hmm. There are bigger problems, but I have a greater confidence. I feel like the old veteran captain of a ship that's like, been through the typhoon, we're good. Here's what's going to happen. You know, I mean, I kind of feel like that. And I don't want to be like smug about it, but I'm like, guys, God's got this. But when I was young, I was like, we're doomed. Yeah. We're doomed. I do this sermon called, I forbid you to speak vulture, because vultures are all like, you're going to die. You're going to die. And I was like, I walked around to church early. We're doomed. We're doomed. I wish I could go back and redo that.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, it's okay. Settle down. Mm-hmm. God's got it. So the problems are bigger. And here's the other thing. Any problem that's in the Bible, we shouldn't be surprised at.
Yeah.
Okay? So you have betrayal. Okay? You have abandonment. You have adulteries. You have, I'm just saying, like, even all the sins that God lists in the Old Testament, he didn't do that. Like, what else might they do? He's like, no, people are that sinful. Yeah. They will do this.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying no to that. And so I look at this and I go, all right, if Moses, his own family disrespected him, okay, check. Okay,
right.
If Judas betrays Jesus, check. Demas forsakes Paul, check. You know what I'm saying?
And same in the New Testament. I mean, you've got Paul, you know, having conversations with the Corinthians about incest in the church.
Yeah.
I do think that's where it's such a benefit when you're actually preaching the Bible to people, because I really feel like we want people to understand, hey, none of these things are new.
Right.
Sometimes I feel like it wipes people out when they meet people that are talking one way and then walking another. And I want to be like, hey, this stuff's been around a long time. We've got to spiritually be ready for it. I felt like in some ways, now I'd be curious to get your take on this. During COVID, you had so many pastors saying, oh, you know, I can't do this and all that. And Barna did the study that showed 38% of pastors would say they would step out of ministry, out of leadership, if they had a way of providing for their family financially. If that were they'd be gone. And I'm going to sound somewhat less merciful than maybe I should here. On the one hand, through all that stuff, I felt like God, it was hard. I mean, I'm not going to say, oh, no, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, God's in control. It was hard. And I felt like God refined different things in my life.
Without a doubt.
But the thing I felt a little bit, I don't know what the right word is, but I'm looking at all these pastors basically saying, when they're getting some attack and some criticism and all that, I want to bail. And I'm like, I mean, do we share the same biblical call to ministry here? Because I'm looking at the Bible and it feels like not some, like all of the leaders went through tough stuff.
Yeah, they need to get out more.
Yeah.
I mean, because the global perspective kept me from thinking that way, which side note, I had one day in my life that I really wanted to lose the ministry. Mm. And we were doing a building program and our builder ran off with the money and we were going to miss our grand opening day. And it was disaster. And I thought, I'm a failure. I have failed. And I thought, what do I do today to lose the ministry? Because I failed. The building program is not going to be done. And the guy ran with our money and $100,000. And I thought, I want to get fired today so that I can just go do something else. And I sat at my desk depressed. And I came up with this plan. I was going to get drunk and call everybody in the church and tell them off. And I thought I was going to get fired and Becca couldn't leave me. See, I had a strategy. And but here's the deal. I'd never been in a liquor store because I don't drink. And I thought, I don't even know how to go into a liquor store. So I sat there depressed all day. And the next day I broke out of it. My wife had a party and got everybody to say, hey, you're a good pastor. You're a bad general contractor. Don't ever do a building program. So I know that day. I know it's possible. But during COVID, I'd seen too much. Like, that was young Rob. Now I've seen believers, and I'm not trying to sensationalize this, but I've seen a believer in Egypt that came up to me and said, if I see you again, I would love that. If not, Lord willing, we'll see, you know, I'll see you in heaven. Mm-hmm. And I just said, hey, you're very serious when you say that. And he goes, oh yes. And he lifts up his shirt and he has burn marks front and back everywhere. And he said, this is from them trying to get me to deny Christ, and I've never denied him. Wow. And I'm looking at that going, okay. Yeah. I mean, I have been there, and you know, I went to Cuba, and I met with the guy that was imprisoned for 10 years, and I'm talking to him about his faith. I'm talking to these people that are living these real things or had a disciple killed. And so my perspective has broadened, and I'm like, wait. This is a small problem. Mm-hmm. Come on, you know? We're not going to get discouraged. And if this bothers us, we need to toughen up. We need to get a bigger global perspective and stop our complaining.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great perspective. And I think for leaders and for folks who are in non-leadership positions, just I'm trying to follow Jesus, we've got to be able to flex some of those perseverance muscles.
Yes.
If we were as weak as we are now, if early first century Christians
would be done,
we wouldn't have a church today. Nope. But they just understood, you know, this is the way it's going to be. Now, there was a reason why the Apostle Paul had to speak. I think of him writing to 1 and 2 Thessalonians saying, you got some stuff coming at you, and I want to build up your faith so that you're ready for what's coming your way. But I just think we've got to be people who are ready for adversity. When you're going through the tough times, and you kind of got at this a little bit when you said Becca got some folks around you, what would you feel like have been some of your most important go-tos when you're not thinking about going into a liquor store and getting yourself fired, which I know is a joke. We just made that announcement here, made to advance, everybody.
No, that was a real day.
So when you think of the tough times and we all have things like, okay, Lord, how do I do things that are healthy, that build energy in to sustain? What's that look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, well, I asked you, I said, what's your hobby? Because you got to have one. My dad said to me, what's going to be your hobby as a pastor? And I said, what do you mean? And he was an auto mechanic. And he said, all the pastors I've watched make it a long time have a hobby. They either hunt, fish, or golf. And so he goes, what do you think you should do? And I said, golf. I'm going to golf.
Yeah.
So he went and bought me a set of golf clubs. So you said, you know, I love to lift. I love to be in shape. And okay, everybody's got their thing that they do. So you got to find out what replenishes you and do that. And then for me also, when I start getting down, I need to go to a place that makes God big. What do I mean? Like, I looked at Lake Michigan the other day. We were golfing and I was like, wow, that's huge. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it made God big.
Yeah.
I go to a mountain and makes God, I forget my smallness and realize his bigness. Mm-hmm. That replenishes me. I have friends that I can call. And I forget who said this, but he said, a good friend doubles your joy and cuts your sorrows in half. Mm. And what he meant by that is on your best day, you want somebody to call and go, like, we broke our sales record. Like, I'm speaking to a marketplace person. And you don't want somebody to go, well, good for you. You know, yeah. You want them to go, no kidding. You've been wanting to break that for a long time. And they double your joy because they celebrate with you.
Yeah.
And on the other side, you want somebody that will cut your sorrow in half. You call them and say, I can't believe we made the front page of the paper. Our kids pastor got arrested. I don't know if we're going to make it. And they go, it's okay. Mm-hmm. We had to fire a youth pastor that did this. God will survive. Here's the things that we did. Here's how you can make it. You're like, really? And it's literally, they cut your sorrow in half and they water it down and then they multiply your joy. So those are invaluable to have those type of people in your life. Those are things that have helped me to have the people to call, the people in my life to have that, you know, and then not feel guilty. Yeah. I used to feel guilty. You know, because ministry is never done. It's never done. And at any point, anybody we're ministering to could walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're in the constant, like, loss game. Like, you know. And so I had to realize I wasn't the Holy Spirit. I was going to do what I was called to do. He was going to do what he's supposed to do. I was going to be faithful with what I have and trust him with the results. And it's like a farmer. I'm going to plant the seed. I'm going to water. I'm going to do it. But I can't make it grow.
Right.
And so I'm going to do everything right so that it can grow. Those are things that helped. And then taking the breaks. We did this, and our church does a sabbatical after 7 years of ministry. Mm-hmm. And so you get a month off in addition to your vacation. So it just replenishes you. And you have to get into your replenishment cycle.
That's what we, years back, and this we take some more extended time off, but years back, we'd kind of been playing with Sabbath, but not actually committing fully to Sabbath. And we finally said, okay, we are truly going to arrange our lives around making sure that we've got a day that is just, it's just for joy. And so, and it was tough at first because then all of a sudden it's like work all day and then you're doing laundry at night or you're doing the house fix thing that you normally would do on the weekend, on Saturday or whatever. I'm doing it when I'm not in the mood to do it at all. But man, just the simple Sabbath thing was just, I mean, it was revolutionary for our family. And
we had Family Fun Fridays is what we called it.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And Family Fun Fridays. And when the kids were out of school, we would take them someplace fun during the day, and then we'd go on a date, Becca and I, mm-hmm. and it was Family Fun Friday.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. It's a great rhythm. So when you think about now 28 years with River Valley, when you just stand back and you think, these are some of the things that I am most grateful to the Lord for over 28 years, what are a couple that come to mind? It could be an accomplishment or a moment or whatever.
I mean, I there's so many thoughts that come to my mind. First is, like, people say, was this your vision? No. I mean, I'd be embarrassed to tell you the vision. It was 1,000.
Hmm.
And now it's 8,500. I thought we'd give hundreds of thousands of dollars to World Missions, and we gave $8 million last year. So to me, there's a couple things that I'm super excited about. I'm excited about the downline. Everybody that is on our staff that leaves healthy, that multiplies in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was envious of Bill Walsh from the Niners years ago.
Mm-hmm.
His whole downline was like, Holmgren won a Super Bowl, and this guy won a Super Bowl, and this guy coached a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I was just, look at that downline of people. And so I'm excited about the downline of people that left healthy mm-hmm. and that are multiplying. I'm really excited about the 500 missionaries that we're going after. We're at 224.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a legacy that says to the nations, we're going to send it. And then I'm excited about the 8 million. And then now the latest thing is our Kingdom Builders legacy. We're training churches how to double their over and above giving.
Wow.
That's our biggest thing.
Yeah.
And I'm giving my life to that. I'm giving 24 days a year to go to other churches to teach Kingdom Builders. And it's not just a church. It's like 200 pastors at a time.
Yeah.
And we're doing these generosity accelerators. So to me, those are things. And then the last thing I'd say is I want the next generation to do more. Like, I'm excited that it's not about me.
Mm-hmm.
It's about this church for his glory. And I'm setting up the next generation to get on my shoulders and go and do more.
Yeah.
That I'm just excited about that.
That's the, I mean, when you think about, like, as a parent, you truly do in your heart hope, I want every one of my kids to go beyond places that I yeah. went. I want them to be able to step on my shoulders and go the next yeah. step and all that. And I think that's just a great vision for church stuff in general. I think sometimes we set our sights too small on what's going to happen while I'm the leader or what's going to happen, you know, whatever. And to dream of the kind of the legacy play, it's really, really cool to see your example in that way, to say, this is way, way, way bigger than what happens at River Valley while Pastor Rob Ketterling is leading it. And it's entirely about the next generation. When you teach Kingdom Builders to pastors, and Kingdom Builders, for those who aren't familiar with it, is an opportunity for folks to designate their giving above and beyond their tithing to missional kinds of commitments, particularly globally, but also other kinds of opportunities. When you're teaching about Kingdom Builders to pastors, and we both know there are lots of pastors that don't really, maybe don't have a passion for the unreached, maybe don't even have awareness of that 42% of the world has little or no access
right.
whatsoever to the good news about a relationship with Jesus. Do you try to kind of weave some of that into Kingdom Builders teaching so we're educating at the same time, or how does that work?
Yeah, we had a consultant come in years ago, and he was talking about, like, you guys love missions. You know, it just seems like that's a part of your DNA. And I looked at him and I go, listen, if you were to cut us open, our heart is global. Hmm. And he goes, that's your tagline, River Valley Church, our heart is global. I mean, he's like, that's it.
Yeah.
So yes, we're going to weave it in. And I want to build the kingdom of God, not the kingdom of River Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to invest in places that have never heard. And so 50% of our Kingdom Builders goes to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 30% goes to local, including our buildings and mm-hmm. our church, and then 20% goes to future Christian leaders, like the interns, the network, the kids ministries that we're investing in, and all that. So it's kind of a 50% to the world.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. It's a great platform to teach, and that what Christina and I are finding is no matter where we go, it is amazing the lack of awareness of the travesty of how many unreached places and people there are in the world. So we're just trying to figure out ways to weave that in no matter what. And so even in this conversation today, it's another way to just help get the word out and all that. When you've got two boys, and they're both married, and both of them are on staff at River Valley, right?
Yes.
Full-time staff members.
Both are.
So tell me about what is it like? There are lots of people who have, where they've got family in the same business. It doesn't have to be a church, of course. Any tips for those who are in family organization relationships when it comes to navigating that?
Because it is so similar. I talk to people all the time that are in the marketplace that have family and business. And by the way, when I tell them that I started the church on credit cards, people in the marketplace are like, good for you. Pastors are like, no. And business guys are like, I did that too.
Yeah, that's funny.
But just like everybody else, I told them, you're going to have to start at the bottom. Mm-hmm. You have to earn it. I won't penalize you, but I won't prefer you. And so they had to start at the bottom, interns. I also, before I'd hire them full-time, I made them both work in another industry before they came to the church.
That makes sense.
So Connor worked in the restaurant industry and then came to work for the church, and Logan worked in the retail industry. And what's interesting is Connor couldn't wait to get out of the restaurant business. And Logan was like, wow, you're giving me a pay cut from the retail sales industry. I said, yes, I am.
Yeah.
But they at least had a different context of culture, boss, this, hours. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't their only boss. Then they came in and I told my board, I said, listen, because they're my kids, they're going to get access, but their gifts are going to keep them in the spot. Like, they're going to get hired because they're my kids.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't carry it, they're out. And I used the Mannings as my example. I said, Archie Manning was an NFL quarterback. And because of that, his kids got to be the ball boys mm-hmm. and get around the organization, be in the locker room. They got the inside track from their dad coaching them. But they still had to prove it on the field when they got their scholarships.
That's good.
And then they had to prove it on the field when they were in the pros. But their dad gave them access that other kids couldn't get.
Right.
And they grew up saying, oh yeah, I was talking to, you know, Deacon Jones, or I was talking to this guy, or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Fran Tarkenton taught me how to throw this. And like, they grew up with that.
Right.
And so I wanted to say that's how I did it. So our kids did that. They start at the bottom. They worked their way up. And it's the staff and the elders, and they're like, hey, what about your son? He should be the guy for this job. And you're like, all right, as long as we agree. Yeah. And yeah. And now they're in a position where I'm advocating for them. Like, guys, take advantage of these guys. They've got a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. And, you know,
what's cool is they've got obviously so much DNA that's been passed down from you and Becca to them.
Yes.
So as far as ambassadors for what the heart of River Valley is, I mean, those boys have got it through and through. So they're going to carry that into any department in the church they really work in.
And huge honor. They understand honor culture. Mm-hmm. They understand the DNA. They understand hard work. They've seen miracles. Mm-hmm. So they're not bound by just like, here's what's in our hands. I mean, they get it. And it's interesting. They're both gifted so differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I joke that Logan is like a little mini me, like without the scars. He doesn't have the scars that I have from doing this, but he just thinks that way strategically. And then Connor, he paints in colors that most people don't see. Like when he does a sermon, I'm like, I never saw the text that way. Wow. Yeah. You know, it just has a different insight.
When you, when you're talking about honor culture, it made me think, so that we were talking about this a little bit at dinner, different traditions, you know, for some, you go, some hear the term, you say honor culture, think, oh yeah, that's great. And others are like, what's he talking about? Honor culture. Just for those who are listening who have no idea what you mean when you say that, maybe you could unpack it for us.
Well, first of all, we teach at River Valley honor in all directions. Everybody's important. Nobody deserves to be walked on or disrespected. Mm-hmm. So the parking lot attendant, the janitor, the lead pastor, we're going to honor everybody. First of all, secondly, we're going to try to free people up to do what only they can do, and we're not going to feel dishonored by taking things off their plate. Mm-hmm. Okay, I could pick up garbage on the weekend. I could, and I would, but is that the best use of my time? Mm-hmm. And so they honor me by saying, Pastor Rob, we got somebody. Yeah, you focus on what only you can do and lead us that way. And they presence us, like our staff, when we're not there. They'll say like, hey, Pastor Rob and Becca wanted to be here. It's not like, whoa, I can't believe they're not here. Yeah. It's like, no, they're out doing this, which is part of our mission, and they honor it. It's simple things like, okay, David and his mighty men. That's what I always use as the example. David's like, they must have been having an argument on what's the best tasting water. And David goes, no, the best tasting water is Bethlehem. I'm gonna tell you, I'd give anything for a cup of water from Bethlehem. And his mighty men risk it, go behind enemy lines to get it and bring it back to him. And he's like, guys, honor is listening to the whispers of your leader's heart. And if it's not immoral or unethical, trying to make it happen because they're your leader. Mm-hmm. And you just love them and you want to honor them. And we put our money where our mouth is. Like, it was Pastor Appreciation Month in October. And Becca and I sent a card to our superintendent on our state level and our national level with our own money to honor them with a gift card. Mm-hmm. Does he need it? Probably not. Neither of them do. But guess what? I need it that my heart says, I honor God's choice in leadership. And although they're not perfect, I'm going to come behind them and I'm going to be an encourager. Mm-hmm. And then I also sent a card from our church money so from the church and from my own personal.
Oh, that's cool.
That's a culture of honor. Culture of honor says, you know, we're going to not second guess you. We're going to always give you the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to second guess you. And so, and we're going to say, yes, we can, and then figure it out if we can't. Mm-hmm. It's not being yes men. It's being yes, we can.
Yeah.
And saying, I'm going to bring my gifts to this, and we're going to try. So all of that. And then it even is in the way we host people. And like, you guys had a gift basket for us. And it wasn't outlandish, like, where we needed another carry-on or something. It was like, hey, here's some of the things you love. Diet Dr. Pepper and this. And we wanted to say, we pay attention to your whispers. And while you're here, we wanted to bless you. Yeah. That's honor. And it goes in all the ways. And it's simple as starting on time is honoring people that are volunteering for us.
Right,
and
totally.
Start on time. Be prepared. Add value to them. Understand. You know, there's so many ways to honor. And and the other thing is, honor doesn't take away from you. People are afraid if I honor you, like if I say great service,
it's not a fixed pie situation.
Exactly.
Right?
When I was at your church, I was like, this worship was great. Okay, I didn't say like, I didn't take the applause for worship away from our church and give it to yours.
Yeah.
I gave it to both.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you just keep honoring. And if the younger generation would get this, if you honor the elders, they have the authority to release the reins to you, mm-hmm. both financially and with authority. And they're looking to see that you don't bow up against them, but you truly honor them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, and when you see somebody honor, and I don't know, there's probably all kinds of reasons why people hesitate to give honor, everything from just haven't seen it modeled well to fixed pie mentality of, you know, whatever. But it's funny because when I see people honor well, it's attractive. You watch somebody, and even because, of course, scripture, when it talks about honor, there's honoring people who are older than you. There's honoring people in leadership. There's honoring, there's just so many applications of that. And I feel like when I see, I remember once I was listening to a girl talk who was like in her 20s. She was single. And she was reflecting on a guy that she saw honoring his grandparents, mm-hmm. just treated them so well, always spoke so highly of them. And I remember her saying something about, she like found it so attractive or something like that. And I thought, you know, I don't think anybody has written a book on here's a dating strategy to catch the girl of your dreams, you know, honor your grandparents.
I'm thinking about the story of David and Abigail, because wasn't like her husband was the idiot that wasn't honoring David, mm-hmm. and David was gonna go kill him.
Yeah,
and she comes out and is like, "No, we're gonna honor you.
Yeah,
here's the food. Here's please don't kill my husband.
Yeah,
you know." And then he later like dies of like a heart attack or some illness.
Yeah,
and David's like, "I want to marry her."
Yeah, I think we have landed on another book proposal right here. It's happened. That's great. And just like nobody's ever thought, how do I find my wife by honoring my grandparents? Nobody's thought about that passage as a potential for a dating strategy.
There you go.
That's a sermon in the making. So I've got your most recent book here.
Yes.
Keep the Change.
Yeah.
And it's such a great book. One of the things I love about your writing style, and this is just kind of, your writing style is like talking to you. It's funny. Listening to you write, I feel like I'm just having a conversation with Rob right now.
Yeah.
That's what it's like.
Yeah.
You're so transparent in this book, and in a way that I think many would feel uncomfortable with. When you're talking about, I mean, for them personally, that is, I'm reading it and you're talking about your weight loss journey, mm-hmm. and all of that. You're just so transparent in general about life. I guess for the sake of our listeners, first just tell us, the book's called Keep the Change.
Right.
Tell us what the big idea is and what motivated you to write it.
Well, it's a sequel to my first book. My first book was Change Before You Have To. And for those that don't know, I'm wearing a medium now, all right? I used to be extra large because I had a giant gut. My face and my gut is where all my weight went. And so we were out to dinner, and my buddy said, hey, what would you do if something happened to Becca? And I said, if something happened to her, I'd be a basket case and I'd have to lose weight. My wife goes, if I was to die, you'd have to lose weight? And she goes, why? And I'm like, did I say that out loud? And my buddy said, what he's saying is he could never get an attractive woman like you looking fat like that. And she goes, you'd lose weight for another woman?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And so I said, I'll lose it for you. So I went, lost the weight, did that. And I wrote the book, Change Before You Have To. Well, then I've lived this lifestyle for, you know, over 10 years. And I'm getting older. And I've put on a few more pounds, but I'm still in a medium shirt, mm-hmm. and doing all this. And I said, so many people lose the change. I watch people get sober and then relapse. I watch people lose the weight, gain the weight. I watch people, oh, honey, I'll save the marriage, and then lose the marriage. And I'm like, how do you keep the change? And so I went through there and just talked about how did I do it and the pitfalls to watch out for. Like the biggest one is just this once. Because mm-hmm. just this once changes the direction.
Yeah, that was so good.
And for some people, like eating, that's one thing. Like just this once dessert. Or I remember one comedian said, you can't get fat in one day and you can't get skinny in one day. Enjoy Thanksgiving. You know? All right.
Yeah.
But if you just this once, you'll just this once over and over again because you change your direction. Another one is like it's the little foxes that spoil the vine. Like it's the little things that you don't realize. They add up over time. Samson syndrome, where I think that was in the book too. Like, I got this. Mm-hmm. I got this. It's my strength that gives me the ability. No, guard against that. Mm-hmm. I still can't move Twinkies and bad food into my house because if I do, I'm looking, I'm like, they're right there, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's been the book. And it's like, what do you need to do to keep the change? You work too hard to make the change.
Well, that's the thing. When you've put the kind of effort you have, whether it be into, for some, making a character change, a physical change, a relationship change. We finally got our marriage back into the place it needs to be. We're back into date nights and we're spending time together and we're talking again. And then the schedule starts to get out of control and you're letting it drift, And all of a sudden you wake up and you go, oh,
what happened?
Yeah. So I just think the premise of the book, and I love John Maxwell's intro to say, you know, it sounds like he said to you, like, you've got to write this book.
He did. I did the devotional in front of him.
Okay.
It was just a devotional. And I sit down next to him. He goes, that needs to be a book.
Yeah.
He goes, I'd read that book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's had weight loss issues and heart issues. And he goes, I would read that book.
Mm-hmm.
And so when John Maxwell says it, you're like, okay, it needs to be a book.
The saith, right? Yeah. I love that. Let's see if I can find it real quick here. I don't know if I can fast enough. But I love when you, speaking of when you're talking about the weight loss journey. Oh, shoot.
Did you dog ear it or anything?
Yeah, I didn't. I was going to mark it, but you just straight up put your... And there's one dog here. You just straight up put your picture, your before and after picture.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved it. I'm like, this is Rob pre-weight loss. This is Rob post. I want to stay like the guy on the right picture. Yeah.
When I show the picture to people, like there's a picture of me walking down the beach.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, that was really you?
Mm.
And I mean, my sister-in-law, she's Vietnamese. And in her accent, she would poke me in the stomach and go, you have baby? You have baby? And I was like, oh, Wing, don't do that. It hurts.
Yeah, it's killing me right now.
So I don't want to be that guy anymore.
Yeah. So when you think of, I mean, what have been, and you kind of alluded to this already, but when you think of the couple things that have been the biggest factors for you of maintaining changes you've made, in some ways you talked about, you know, avoid these things. Have there been anything on the proactive side that you go, man, this has been the money for me?
Yeah. I mean, the joy, like think about it, says for the joy set before him, he said, okay, there's a joy that's set before you. Like when you work out, you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When I listen to praise and worship music, do my time with the Lord, spend, you know, like spend time in his presence, I feel better. I mean, I'm not punishing myself. I'm actually doing the things that lead to the abundant life.
Right.
And there's things that lead to the abundant life. And when you do them, you feel better.
That's it.
And so I'm looking at that. And I'm also saying, I want to live longer. I want to survive. I want to be in health. I want to run with my grandchildren. So I'm thinking of the positive things that are there. And what's interesting is when I talk to my doctor about this, and this is not just weight loss, by the way, the book, it's not just weight loss.
Oh, yeah, that's very important to note here.
But when I talk to my doctor, he's like, people don't think about the good things. He said, I tell him, like, you're not going to be able to run. They're like, I don't like to run anyways. You're not going to be able to play with your grandchildren. I'll play video games. You know, and he's like, a preferred future doesn't get him to change. And he said, even saying, you're going to die. They're like, you got to die someday. No, I don't want to live that way.
Right.
I want to live abundant life. And so those are things that have kept me positive. And then also the compound interest of those behind you. If I live a healthy life in my marriage, what does that do to my kids?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that do to my grandkids? If I say there'll be no more addiction in our family and that goes and I'm going to not give in to alcohol and we're going to beat this addiction, what does that do to the kids? And then they're not children of alcoholic. Then they're not. You see what I'm saying?
Right, totally.
So there's a compound interest. And I'm thinking of the long game, just like people would financially, of if I do it now, 20 years from now, it's worth this. Well, if I do this now, 20 years from now, what is that worth in my marriage, in my family, in my parenting, in my business, in my...
Oh, such a great perspective. Such a great perspective. We have three kids. One of them is probably the most like me. And so we joke because I grew up and I had, you know, some different challenging dynamics in my family growing up. And so I think, like anything, you compensate for those in different ways, mm-hmm. and it's hard to know on nature, nurture, what's what. But needless to say, we look at our youngest son, Evan, who's the most like me. And Christina likes to say, Brian, Evan's what you would have been like if you would have grown up in a healthy household. It's fun to see that. It's fun to see his potential because I feel like I had to work through, man, I mean, God's grace, right? He'll meet you wherever you're at and helps you grow and helps you overcome different things. But to watch Evan and think you are having so much less to overcome because you're starting from a healthy environment, a healthy family, and just to watch the kids, the way they conduct themselves... I mean, honestly, I don't have a category for it. I never saw anything like that in my life or my sister's lives. or anything like. And then I watch them, and I'm like, well, what's this going to mean for their kids? Oh, my
Compound
gosh.
Compound interest.
My grandkids are going to be amazing. It's going to be the best.
I love it.
So anyway, I can't wait for that. You've got so much going on. Of course, this is your most recent book, but you got several books. You've got your building into churches all around the world when it comes to generosity and helping them maximize yep. their potential to make a difference for the kingdom. All these different things. How do you stay... I don't, balance is a weird word. I don't want to say balanced because I sometimes that means people get this picture of everything's got to have its exact equal percentage.
Right.
How do you stay in a healthy place when you've got the level of responsibilities and opportunities that come your way?
Yeah. And first of all, I would tell people, you can't live my schedule unless you're at this level. Like, I used to wonder, like, how in the world do they do that? Well, they learn the cheats, if you will, along the way. They learn to delegate. Mm-hmm. They learn to become a specialist. They get the team around them that makes mm-hmm. it. I feel like running at the speed I do is like an IndyCar driver that has a pit crew, a general manager, or this. Like, I'm driving, but there's a whole crew making this happen.
Right.
So that's what people don't see behind the scenes. A good assistant will double you and turn you into two of you because they take the things off your plate that you don't like doing, that drain you, mm-hmm. and they get you to the places, the meetings, they get you informed, they keep you. A good assistant turns you into Rob 2.0. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's first thing, a good assistant. And then secondly, my wife speaks into my calendar where we have our vacation, okay? And I know this sounds crazy, but I put my vacation in there, and I have a color-coordinated calendar.
Okay.
So yellow is vacation, and I can tell you exactly when we're going on vacation. I've even bought tickets for the vacations, all right? And our kids know that. Matter of fact, when they were growing up, once a quarter, we had something for them to look forward to.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, once a quarter. And it was on the calendar.
Yeah.
So that if I got an emergency call and I'd be leaving, and I'd say, hey, but remember, what do we do on September 10th?
Yeah. Yellow's coming.
Yeah, yellow's coming.
Yeah.
And so I have that. And then I can also see where the breaks are, what's important. I have everything color-coded from what's Front Row Leadership, which is the ministry I run, what's River Valley Church, what's my executive presbytery role, what is our Kingdom Builders. I have everything color-coded. Okay. And so then I can see if it's out of balance. And then I can see where there's holes in the schedule. And then I get to choose to only do life-giving things. Now, I used to not believe this when I was younger. People like myself would come in to speak and they'd say, I only go where I want to, where it's going to be life-giving. And I was like, yeah, whatever. You go wherever there's an honorarium, you know?
Yeah.
No, it's not true. Like they go where it's life-giving. And if we didn't believe in you and your church and all mm-hmm. that you're doing, I would have said, sorry, busy this weekend.
Right.
But we believe in it and believe in you and what you're doing. It's fabulous. So I choose things that are life-giving, which is the privilege of when you're at this speed. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing things that are fast. I have a great team. I'm putting the big things in with my family in place. I'm choosing things that are life-giving. And then I'm hanging around with great leaders. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly looking for ideas and things to, wait a minute. Like I was just talking to a guy the other day about a generosity app that will send videos to people in your church that you make. And I'm like, okay, that's going to help me, pastor. I want that.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm looking for the tools that are there. And I don't feel guilty about taking my time off. Okay. I'm going to work like a maniac when it's my time to work because mm-hmm. I'm driven to be a workaholic. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to take my time off. And I met with Leith Anderson. At the time, he was pastoring and he was president of National Association of Evangelicals.
Yeah, sure. He was at Wooddale, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm meeting with him for lunch, and I said, Leith, am I a workaholic? And I explained my schedule. He goes, no, you're not. He goes, you're a hard worker. And he goes, now, don't feel guilty for taking time off. Use it all, or you're stealing from the church. I'm like, what? I thought, I'm giving him back days. He goes, no, they paid for a fresh you, a recharged you, and you stole from them.
Wow,
you gave them a tired, empty you.
Yeah.
And then he told me this. He said, on a submarine, every inch of that space is valuable, every inch of it. And he said, and they have a warm bunk is what they call it. There's one bunk for three people. You get it for 8 hours, the next person gets it for eight, the next person. So when you get out of bed, somebody else is coming to bed, and the mattress is still warm. They call it the warm bunk.
Huh.
Okay, because space is so precious. But he goes, the captain of the submarine gets his own bed, his own dining room, his own study. Because he's the leader of it, and he doesn't say, oh, guys, sorry, come in here and bunk. There are critical moments as leader that you're going to have to make, and they need 100% of you.
Right.
That's why you need to do your vacation. That's why you need to be sharp. That's why you need to be recharged. That so don't feel bad about that. And when those moments come, earn your keep, make the critical decision, and lead the church. So I was like, this is invaluable.
Yeah, that's such a good word. Well, I think as leaders, especially if you're coming out of a faith-based context, we want to be servant leaders.
Yeah.
And so we think naturally servant leaders means I say yes to everything that people are asking for help with because I want them, you know, I want them to see I'm not above serving. I'll pick up the trash. I'll do whatever. We last year's women's conference and I had the time to do this, but I was like, I'm, you know, racking chairs and doing all that stuff. And I want them to see like, hey,
I'm not above this.
But I also know I got to get up and preach tomorrow in front of a ton of people. And if I'm like dog tired in there because I modeled servanthood leadership, but I can barely, you know, stand up straight afterwards, then I've probably missed the point. So it's still that heart of the servanthood, And you want, you know, if that's your heart, the staff is going to see that. But I think you're right. Having that idea of, I'm still going to make the decisions where it's, whether it's recharge or whatever, I'm going to do what it takes to bring my best self to serve people. If I'm not doing that, then I'm really not serving people well.
And I got another teaching that I did called Minutes versus Moments. I'll summarize it. When you're starting in business or in ministry, it's about the minutes. Mm. You're setting up chairs. You're doing this. You probably bought the groceries for the first social.
Right.
And like invited everybody to it, and you bought the groceries, and you set up the room. And did all, after a while, you're like, wait, there are key moments that I have to lead that no one else can lead, and I'm not getting paid for the minutes. There's other people that can do the minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I have to own the moment.
Mm,
so I have to be prayed up. I have to be prepared. I have to be healthy, and I have to own that moment. And it goes from the moment of leading the charge financially for the building campaign or whatever else to calling out a discipline issue. Or there are key moments. And I was raised, again, dad was an auto mechanic, union worker, right? And it was, you log the minutes, mm-hmm. and you show your value by the minutes, and you turn them in. And now I realize in the position I'm at, it's moments, key moments that I have to lead, and that's where I earn my keep.
Yeah, so good. So have you ever had a chance where, or a time where you've even with the perspective, it's about the moments where you've been like, man, I have been running too hard here. Have you just, where you're kind of redlining and you're like, did you develop your system of managing your life such that you really are good at avoiding the red line moments?
Yeah. And I don't red line easy, and I recharge around people. So even today, right now, doing this, I'm charged up.
Yeah.
I'm pumped. If my wife was to do this, she'd be exhausted and want to go sleep for 4 hours.
Last night, you see her running to the car after dinner.
Oh, yeah. She was done.
We're like talking to the parking lot. I look over at the car. Becca's sitting there. I don't know if it's in the front seat, but she's like, I'm just waiting for these yahoos to get done with this because I want to go to sleep. I loved it.
Yeah, but I'm like, what's next?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't redline easy. So I'm a bad example because even my staff, I know that this sounds crazy, but my whole staff was like, we can't keep up with you.
Mm-hmm.
We can't. And what I've learned is, I can't impose my energy level on them. And so, okay, I'll move on and I'll do something else. But I've stayed healthy. I've avoided the red line.
Cool.
My wife tells me that I'm the yes man. Like, I'm like, yes, let's do it.
Uh-huh.
Let's go. Let's try. And so I don't red line easy, but my family red lines and they call like, okay, time out. You need to spend more time with us.
Mm.
And I went to a life coach and he did a whole thing on my whole life. It was like thousands of dollars. And he said, you have to spend this amount of time more with Connor and Logan or you're being a bad dad.
Wow.
And when somebody calls you out, like has a formula
down
and they're like, literally, you spend enough time with Becca, you spend enough time alone, you spend enough time in your hobby. Connor and Logan need 2.7 hours a month more than you're giving them.
Mm.
Whoa. And so I was like, I got to change and I got to do it. And now there's an annual father-son golf trip on there.
That's cool.
There's certain things that are there.
How old were they when you had that insight?
They were probably college age.
College age, okay.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm glad they were in some ways college age because it's like for dads who are listening right now, or moms for that matter, sometimes I remember talking with a mom who her daughter was just, she had just moved to college. And this mom was absolutely brokenhearted. And we said, you know, and she, the, her daughter was great. And we said, what's going on? And she's, it was like, she felt like she had missed some moments along the way that could have been there. And she was just filled with all this regret and all that. And we kept trying to say, listen, this isn't done yet. I mean, she might be in college, but, and so for you to have that adjustment, even at their college age, and my guess is if the guys were sitting in the room, they would say, oh, you know, it's been fantastic when he made that shift. You know,
they would probably say it's been better, but we still have to remind him. That's what they would say. They would say, come on. Like the other day I did a breakfast with them and they were both worried. Like, what's going on? What's going on?
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Audible, meet me Saturday morning for breakfast. And they didn't know. I actually gave them each one of my watches.
Oh, is it cool?
Cause I have a few watches that I like. And, they were like, is everything okay? I said, you're here because you're my sons.
Yeah.
We're not talking about church. And I wanted to give you each a watch, you know, now while I'm here and you can enjoy these. And they're like, you're kidding.
That
you know?
Is really cool.
So it was literally just, let's do this together.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's cool. Like, so that's an example of more spontaneous, but having a rhythm of things. I feel like, I mean, I can be more of a fly by the seat of your pants guy. When Christine and I were first married, one Saturday we woke up and she asked, before we rolled out of bed, she said, what's the plan? And I'm like, what's the plan? That's the worst possible question you could ask me on a Saturday morning. I mean, the whole idea is not having a plan. But as I've gotten older, you just realize you have to be intentional about some stuff. Oh. And our oldest got married last May. He moved to Grand Rapids. And so they're about 35, 40 minutes away from us right now. And it was wild because we saw him and our now daughter-in-law so often leading up to their wedding. Then, man, they get married. They're both doing their thing. And it was like, wow, we don't see them as much.
Oh yeah.
And so we really had to step back and say, we had a plan, but now we need to recalibrate and say, what's the new plan? And we got into, like Jared and I, just this last week, we tried to do a monthly lunch now. And there are other things that come up that are the more just here and there things, but our monthly lunch. And it's a whole new season. It's so much fun. Jared walked away from that lunch and he goes, Dad, I think this is the best lunch we've ever had.
No kidding.
Come on, right there. You know, it's just fantastic to hear that from my kid. And it's all again about, it doesn't take a whole ton of intentionality.
It's true.
Just enough to say, let's have something and we're not going to just be the victims of circumstance here and drift into almost, I suppose, nothing of great value tends to happen by drift. So anyway, that's a good example of you and your boys.
No, yeah.
Last question is this,
okay.
Just anything else on your heart that when you think of things that God has put on you or anything you'd like to communicate to our audience, just anything comes to mind that you'd like to share?
Hey, that's such a broad
it
question.
It is the broad, literally the broadest possible question
the
I can
broadest
ask.
Question. So where do I go with that one? The biggest thing I would just say is, ask yourself, I ask myself this question a lot and people don't realize it. How many talents have I been given and am I giving a good return for those talents? Because, you know, the parable of the talents, 1, 3, or 5. And I was like, was I given 3 or was I given 5? If I was given 5, I want to give a 5 talent return. And so I would just say, give a 1, 3, 5 talent return. And don't just think in area of money. Think as a parent, as a Christian, as building his kingdom.
Yeah.
Building your business, all the above. Are you really giving a 5 talent effort? And that's been something that I've lived with my whole life. I want to get to heaven and God say, like, well done. Like, you actually overachieved. I didn't even think you could do that much.
Yeah.
like, if that's possible. But I mean, like, I want to get the bonus credit.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, you know, have God say, you really did what I wanted you to do and you gave a great return.
Such a good word. And the name of our podcast is Made to Advance. I want to just, if I can tag on that, and I hate, that's such a positive word, so I want to tag on a little bit of a caution to folks, because the one talent guy not only buries it, but then tries to blame his inactivity on the master.
Right.
Oh, it's because you and this and that, you know, and that's why basically I didn't do anything, even though it would have taken a bare minimum of effort to take his one talent and put it on deposit at the bank and gain some kind of interest. And I think we live in a culture that is really has almost elevated being a victim or playing a blame game on somebody. And of course, there are folks who are victims of great things. So that is not at all to deny that in the slightest. But it is to say that there is something in human nature that can be prone to coming up with reasons, excuses, and or deflections on, well, sure, I was given three talents, but maybe I had great potential, but then this, my parents and my this and my that. And I just think probably the both of us would want to say, no matter what your story, no matter how many talents God gave you, in His grace, He has the ability to work with you to take the talents that He gave you and to multiply them into something far greater.
Without a doubt.
Whatever barrier you think you have, whatever excuse, whatever reason, I mean, you and I have both met people that you just think, I hear stories all the time. I can't imagine a worse story. And the person has transformed their life.
Yes.
And so just really, it's a word of hope more than anything else, slash a word of caution. I want to end with saying, your word is so good on taking the talents God has given us, continue to grow them, continue to say, what God can you do? And saying, I am not going to be an excuse maker. I'm not going to come up with some reason.
No excuses.
This is why I can't, or this is why I didn't. No, God's given you everything you need. And with His help and power, it's going to be fantastic. So
I love it.
Rob, thank you for being here today. It's been an absolute privilege to have you on. And I don't know when this will air, but you're our first recorded guest on Made to Advance. So there is no first. It just happened right here. There's no other first but this first. And so
I appreciate it.
I appreciate the gift you are to my life, Christina's life. You and your family are an incredible example, and you're making great moves for the kingdom. We so respect River Valley, and just, man, we cheer you guys on. We pray for you, and
you
inspire
so
us to go to the next level. Take the talents of this church and say, God, do more, do more.
Do more. I love it. In Jesus' name, do more.
Amen. Well, that was such a great conversation with Pastor Rob. I am so appreciative of everything he had to share. Obviously, we got to hear about some of the highs of ministry and the incredible impact that River Valley is making. But I love the fact that he also shared all of the challenges along the way. And that's just the reality of leadership. If you and I are going to be living into it and reaching our full potential, we're going to hit some serious bumps. So what does it mean to be the kind of person who has the grit and the ability to persevere even through the setbacks? And I thought Rob was a great example of that. More than an example, though, he gave us all kinds of practical skills and tools to be able to get through those hard times. So thankful for Pastor Rob. And I want to just say, listen, if this episode was an encouragement to you, please rate us, review us, share this podcast with one of your friends. Let them know that there'd be something in this conversation that would be helpful and encouraging to them as well. And this has been a production of Engedi Church. We've got all kinds of other great content on the way. So until next time, don't forget, you were made to advance.